Hello, listeners. It's Janine.
And Stephanie.
And welcome to The Course of Course, episode 20.
Woohoo!
It's a bit of a milestone episode for us.
Yeah.
It's so exciting to do 20.
It is. And guess what? We finally have more listeners.
Exactly. Shout out to Mike Lemieux. He's been very, very kind.
Generous with his
support. Exactly. So thank you again.
He listened to all our podcasts, every single one of them, in a marathon, back to back.
That's fantastic.
And it
was
inspiring.
We should send him like a basket of muffins or something. I don't know what the appropriate gift would be after listening to all of these.
He inspired me to go on Facebook and start our page.
Kudos to you, Stephanie.
It was on 3/15/15, so that's a date we can remember.
The Ides of March. Do you know what happened on the Ides of March?
No.
That's when Julius Caesar was released back to God.
I wonder where he went.
Beware next. The Ides of March. But for us, it was a great day.
It was a great day. It's fun to hear from listeners. We have one in Canada.
Wow. So I told you we had this huge international audience. I was just waiting for them to manifest.
Let's give a shout out to Devin and thank her for sending her story in to me.
Okay, great. Thank you, Devin. We appreciate you being part of our world. All right, so let's start this episode. We have so much to talk about right now. This week has been kind of fascinating for both of us.
Feels like it's been a hell week for me.
Oh my, okay. Tell us more, Stephanie.
I'm struggling with time, boundaries, overwhelm. On the same token, I have been meditating and having some really deep, peaceful, one of my quotes, peace to my mind, let all my thoughts be still. That little affirmation I keep pulling up to try and counteract the what's going in the outside false world.
Are you having just a lot of craziness going on in your inner thoughts?
I'd say it's less my inner thoughts and more of getting taken in by a tidal wave of fury of things going on in the outside world.
I think that's a really good point, and I think our listeners probably experience this as well when we're around people who maybe a little more manic than us, or there's just drama that we get sort of pulled into. And I think that's sort of what happened to you this week.
Yes, listeners, if you have any bipolar, schizophrenic, mental illness kinds of situations, I would love to hear how you apply the course and still love them and be there for them, because that's kind of what's been happening. One of my friends, that specialness that we were talking about, it's like I'm one of the few people he'll actually reach out to when things are getting bad.
He is the friend of yours that's going through some
Correct.
Sort of dark night of the soul.
Yes. He's been floating around from Facebook friend to Facebook friend for months now, and now he's in Florida, and the parents are concerned. Like, is he alive or is he dead? Like, I can feel their true love and concern for him, and yet it's escalated so out of control that I am now not answering their calls. I had to create a boundary for myself. It was sucking up my time, and I would rather use my timeline to apply to the course. And I don't mean to be selfish, and I'm trying not to feel guilty, but it literally sucked up so much of my time that it's Saturday and I have to go into work and catch up.
Yeah, it's another good point. When we're in this third dimension, crazy planet world that we're in, we do get pulled into drama that isn't our own, but somehow we kind of entrain with it. And now we're to the point where, okay, this isn't going to work. We pull away and we feel guilty about it because we care about the people that are going through this. But you still have to say, wait a minute, this isn't my play. This isn't my mess. This is his mess.
But is it? It's like if we each create our own world and our own characters in the story, I guess I did create it.
But your world isn't about his mess.
So what is it about? Like, is it, I feel like it's just a great example of the ego.
Absolutely.
And I don't want that ego world.
The reality, if I can even say that in this context, is that the mess doesn't exist for him or you.
Okay.
But you both identified with it. And you got to a point where you said, you know what, this isn't real for me.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't really exist for me. It might still be real for him, but in reality, bigger reality, it's just two people playing out roles in a play that you can subtly change and focus on something else. And you just decided to focus on something else.
Yeah, taking care of myself, it literally feels like survival right now. Like, he's in a survival mode, I'm in a survival mode, and I'm shutting the door.
How many times do we go through this in our personal relationships, in our family relationships, where this drama occurs? And we have this strange dance where we invite it and we participate in it. And then when we pull away, we still feel guilty about it.
Yeah. I mean, if that holy and innocent thing, like he's innocent and pure, like he just doesn't know, just because he thinks he's speaking to the Virgin Mary and all these saints, and he has a, thinks he has the blood of Christ and that people are out to get him. You know, like there's some religious themes going through it, which is very interesting for me. And when I think about the Billy Fingers book and how the sister was always there for him, I kind of feel like his sister that is there for him. It is a little bit complex or complicated, and then yet it's not. It's very simple.
And the sister in the Billy Fingers book, she's the author, and this really is her brother. And the way the book unfolds, Billy Fingers basically is sort of channeling through her. So she's writing down his communication to her. But what I really appreciated about her is she loved him and she was there for him, but she wasn't there to fix him. It wasn't an automatic okay. We all go through that, and she did in the book, where she was doing what she needed to do to send him a plane ticket or give him money or whatever. But there comes a time where it's like, that's not helping them and it's not helping you.
Yeah, we had a discussion about tough love and do you transfer monies into his account so he can get food? I mean, the guy had $0 when he got released from the psych ward, right, and was still wearing the same shirt and pants that he had a week ago. Mm-hmm. They decided to send him $30 so he could at least go to Taco Bell is where he went.
Well, this is why I think Third Dimension Crazy Planet World is sort of fascinating. And I think it's one of the reasons why we are all still here talking about it, because there's a part of our ego that wants to participate and say, oh, okay, don't worry, I can help you. Because I talked earlier that when I was reading the course this morning, I love this passage, the chapter, The Treachery of Specialness. Treachery is such an amazing word. In the Big Blue Book, at least mine, it's on page 502. The nice thing about this is as soon as I read it, I knew it immediately impacted me, because I'm all about specialness. And it really kind of punched me in the face, because this week I was at work, which seems to be kind of like the petri dish of my learning lately. And I, for a long time, have identified with the fact that I have a very high intelligence. I always have had that. But the reality is everybody does. Sometimes we just mask it, right? But for whatever reason, in this lifetime, I'm like, oh, I'm really smart. And I use that to make it seem like, well, I'm more special than they are because they're an idiot. And I'm reading this morning and thinking, oh my God. Usually I'm like, oh yeah, I love the course, it's so good. And then it'll just be like, you don't know nothing, lady. You don't know nothing. And I can't tell you how much this book has changed me, because it really puts it kind of in my face, but in a gentle way. It doesn't really come out and say, you are an idiot and these are the reasons why and there's no way you're that smart. But I found it fascinating. I had a meeting with, I'm going to use this word, nemesis, just because, you know, it's English. So I had a meeting with my nemesis, and she was talking about something. And in a thought bubble above my head in white font, I heard myself say, you don't know what you're talking about. And while that was happening, I was editing myself. Like, hold on, she's you. Good. She's just you. She's reflecting on you. It's one of the few times I've actually been able to like divorce myself from my strong, I'm so smart ego to say, hold on. If she's reflecting back at you, what can you learn something here? Don't discount it just because your ego thinks that this person is not very smart. It was the beginning for me of slowly chipping away at this massive ego that I have. I've been doing it a little, but I think it was the first time I really felt like I felt it shift strongly. So I was really grateful about that. But it's this identification of specialness that we all do. I was doing it with my sister. You know, I'm so special. I'm going to take care of her issue. How sad, she can't take care of it herself. What was that about? We're both special in the way that we're both God, but we're not special as individuals, as though we're different. Oh, these lessons.
No!
They knock me on my butt sometimes.
They really do. I mean, that false world out there is horrid. And it's interesting, when I'm sitting down to meditate lately, I'm using earplugs because it's been 90 degrees in March. I've had my windows open, but that ego is just constantly pinging at me, whether it's a car backing up and hearing the beeping noise or a helicopter flying over. I just feel a little more sensitive to sound and noise, and it feels like it's heightening in the outer world. The earplugs help. So I suggest that for anyone who wants to drown it out and just have some real calm in their mind.
Taking it back to Disappearance of the Universe, Art and Persa was talking about what it was like to basically transcend and become enlightened while she was still Persa, while she was still in body.
11 years?
11 years. And then Artin a few years after her, I think. They were both enlightened at the same time. Is that correct? Before one of them passed?
I think his came after she passed.
Okay. Well, we've only read the book like 20 times. We can't always remember the details. But I always think, if I'm going through a tough time, it's still it's possible. I can do this. Why? Because Artin and Persa did. Uh-huh. It's so nice to be able to look back at them and use them as a reference point.
That's probably why they came to us from the Holy Spirit, right? Mm-hmm. They're examples.
Right, and the invitation is still open for Artin and Persa want to join us on our podcast. Happily allow them.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be so awesome.
But I think they had told Gary that they would only show up to him.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I had a friend pass from cancer. That's been interesting. And another one diagnosed with cancer, lung, liver, bladder. You know, that's a dead man walking. And I'd love to get him the Billy Fingers book. I don't know if he'd read it or if he can read right now. Maybe audio's better. Yeah, death. Wow.
No, it's funny.
Freedom.
Even though we keep reading about this and we're like, oh, yeah, I get it. Even when we hear that people we know and care about are passing or have passed, we can't help but feel like emotionally like, oh, my God, this is so sad, even though we know better.
Yeah. I mean, I tuned into him immediately, my high school buddy, Daryl, and just invited him to go to the light and look for Jesus. And I kind of did some work with it a little bit through a meditation, and it made me feel better. I don't know if it affected him, but that whole idea of one mind, that's something I've been working on lately, is healing the whole mind. The whole mind is sick. If the whole mind is healed, then we're all in heaven awake and there is no more false world.
I keep going back to our dream state. Remember our dreams in the morning, go, oh, that was interesting. And then we go about our day, not really realizing the coin is completely flipped. Sequence and the experiences we have in the dream state are really impactful. But our ego is so strong that when we wake up, it's like that decision is made, oh, that was just make-believe. That was just a dream, as though it wasn't important. Yeah. What's really important right now is me getting my clothes on and getting to work, not kind of reflecting on the dream. I had a dream last night that I was homeless. And I woke up and I thought, well, that was interesting. And look at me, I'm still around.
Yeah, maybe it's a parallel dream.
Who knows? But I'm starting to become a little more fascinated with that part of it. I remember when we were in graduate school and we were taking classes on dreaming and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it always felt to me that it was very kind of one-sided. Like, well, if you dream of a car, it means this. It's like, well, you know, there's so many more multi-dimensional facets to our experience. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I buy if I dream of one thing, it means that universally.
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout out to Dr. Henry Reed, dream professor. I used to have a dream group at my house every week that met. And
I actually was in it.
Yeah, he encouraged us to not really use dream symbol books and just go within and ask, what does that mean to me? That symbol.
He was such a great professor.
He was my favorite.
I think all the women in the class were just like so into him. He was just a free spirit.
He started the Dream Lab at Harvard.
Princeton.
Princeton, thank you. Same he started difference. The Dream Lab at Princeton. Okay, so I think it was last week you were telling me that you call your ego all these names.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I think I just called mine ego. Well, guess what?
See.
It came out this week.
You can't help it.
It was FU, MOFO in the long form and short form.
Well done.
So honestly, that's what I call my ego.
I like this creative part of you coming out now. Welcome to the club. So I'm looking at Stephanie's notebook right now, and she has handwriting in font, I don't know, 112. Like, that's the largest font handwriting I've ever seen. Can you get like 5 words on that page?
I wrote, meditation is the key, going within and remembering who I am. One. I am oneness. Yeah, I do feel like I do have some healing going on in my mind and that I have got it somewhat intellectually. But at this point, I feel that the way to transform the crazy is to meditate.
Well, they say this over and over again. The key is inside of us.
Yeah, building that bridge and that glow of white light, just filling it up more and more. Pretty profound. I mean, one night I couldn't sleep. I was up at 1:30 in the morning and I'm just like, fine, I'm going to read my lesson. And
now,
then I woke up 4 hours later, sorry. And then I, you know, 2 hours earlier than I needed to be. And I thought, all right, I'm just going to meditate. Got up in my chair and sat there and meditated.
I think it's great you didn't fall back to sleep then.
Yeah. And I just went to work. It was like,
How often in the morning when you read the course, do you ever get bored?
I would say never.
I'm going to be honest here, as I always am. I do. I mean, I'll read it and I recognize the fact that it's my ego saying, oh no, there's other things you need to do than this. So I'll read a couple pages and then my attention span is someplace else and then I have to come back. I haven't trained my mind yet to be able to sit there and really focus and be at one with it for any length of time.
I have to admit, I am not either. I mean, I don't know if I would call it bored, but as I'm reading it, my mind is thinking of five other things at once. And the second I notice it, I'm like, whoa, I just went through a whole page and I don't even know what I read, like what it said. And then I'll make myself start over. And I will force myself to start over until I actually get through it. And sometimes it's four or five times because my mind is so active.
That's exactly what happens to me.
Yeah.
I will read it and it's so impactful. The words you had said, I think last time, that the course is so beautifully written. And I love the use of the language that Jesus and Helen Schuckman employed here. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I read treachery and I thought that's the absolute perfect word, the treachery of specialness. No other word would have been as impactful to me. I totally appreciate that. But while I'm reading it, I'm thinking, oh, I'm kind of hungry. Maybe I should get something to eat.
Exactly. Oh, the laundry's going. I wonder when they'll be done so I can get down there and sneak in and get it mine done.
And then I thought, you know, so many people read the Bible and they have the Bible, which is fine. Like every day they open a passage. And I thought, I have in my hands with this big blue book the actual words of Jesus, as opposed to what may have been recorded many, many years after the physical body of Jesus has passed. I feel like the course is source material. I don't believe the Bible to be source material. Mm-hmm. So in my hand, I'm actually reading the actual voice of Jesus, which is like mind-blowing. And I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah, course correcting us.
Maybe one day I can ask if I can meet up with Helen Schuckman in my dream state. I just have such appreciation for her. She was the vessel in which my life is changing and your life is changing.
And all of our lives will change, hopefully, when they all read this book. Or they say there's many paths to God. This is just one.
Right, exactly. I think Mike Lemieux, possibly in his Jesus Fish book, had talked about there are many people who have transcended and became enlightened, and they didn't do it through this study. But this study is just so much, I don't want to say easier, because I'm never going to say the course is easy per se, but it's so approachable. I can hang my hat on it and say, here's the framework. Mm-hmm. Have at it.
Yeah, it feels, I don't know if psychological or intellectual is the right word, but just learning that what we all are programmed to think is not real, and that it's so simple, we can just deny it. Like, we can build that bridge to God that would not be possible without the big blue book.
Right.
And that it's actually a mind thing.
Well, 20 years ago when this was first kind of put into our path and we weren't yet ready for it, the reason why is our mind didn't get to the point where we could say, oh, all right, this is something that's useful. Mm-hmm. It took us a while. But had this not happened, had this book not been written in 1975, I'm not sure what year that was, mm-hmm. today wouldn't it be
possible.
So it really does show you how efforts of one person can truly affect so many people.
Yes.
So profoundly grateful for that.
So one of my best friends came down last week, and she was going to go with us last weekend to the Gary and Cindy thing, which ended up not happening. And I got together with her and the other best friend on Monday night, and it turns out that she's been listening to the audiobook of DU, which is wonderful.
That's great.
But there's so much more in the book that she's not present to because she never finished reading the book. So I reminded her about that. And then I gave a copy of DU to the other friend. So now they're both reading it. And then my hair stylist, I just got it for her in Spanish. But even just trying to get her that book was so frustrating that night, because I had sent it to her on March 5th, and now it was 2 weeks later, and I sent it again because she never got it, and we were both struggling with what is wrong with iTunes, what is wrong with our iPads, what is wrong with our Yahoo accounts. Like, we were just really going into the spin.
My goodness.
When it was just so simple, I was emailing it to the wrong name. Like, she gave me the wrong name, or I wrote, you know, I was spelling out exactly what I was writing. But the ego is so tricky sometimes. But we eventually got it to her. So that's my first Spanish buy.
So you purchased the digital book of DU in Spanish.
In Spanish.
And you were able to gift it. That was great.
Yeah.
I do want to clarify the audio version. The reason why you had said that there's not as much information there is the audio version, from our understanding, is abridged.
Yes. I think it's about 6 hours maybe long. And if it was the whole thing, it's probably be about 15 hours.
And we've listened to the audiobook so many times going up and down to wine country. That's usually when we listen to it. But we've also read the actual book many, many times.
Yes. And then just another shout out to another opportunity for people to hear Gary, The Secrets of the Immortal, Advanced Teachings. Mike Lemieux reminded me about that. And it's about 5 or 6 hours long. Mm-hmm. It's pricey. It's $42. Yeah,
but totally worth it.
But worth it. Yeah. I mean, he's going into some of the Passion of the Christ stuff, and I'm finding to be very turned off because it reminds me of my mentally ill friend. That was such a bloody movie or whatever. But there's also been some great nuggets in there to get represent to.
Yeah, I think Gary Renard is really kind of, I hate to use the word prophet, but I want to say it anyway, the prophet of this generation in terms of getting the word of Jesus to people without having all that religious kind of patina surrounding it, which I so appreciate.
Yes. The religious thing is pretty strong in some cultures. Mm-hmm. The friends that are Greek Orthodox and believe that their son's going to burn in hell because he's gay, and me talking to them and saying, you know, I believe that God loves everyone and we're all a part of God, and who are we to judge our brother? And like, that's his journey, and it's pretty tough to be gay right now. I mean, it's Ellen, I think, helped a lot with that. Boy, what about her journey, having that hit show and then they find out she's gay and then everyone hates her and now she's a talk show host and everyone loves her again.
Because I think time really does heal all wounds. Mm-hmm. I think as people get more enlightened, just chronologically, a lot of this stuff just kind of dissipates. For me, I just feel like the more I've been doing the coursework, the more I kind of seem apathetic towards stuff that I used to get passionate about. Politics. I have no real interest in talking about it. I don't care. I just don't care. I'm getting to the point where, well, if everything's kind of make-believe anyway, why am I getting so invested in it?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not somebody who's having these deep intellectual conversations about stuff that I don't really care about anymore.
That's beautiful.
I used to be so into that. Like, just sit down and let's talk about this. But now I don't really care.
I feel that that's part of that sameness, mm-hmm, that they speak about that we're trying to get to.
So I'm glad you brought that up. So sameness, right? Let's just say you work with somebody. We both had this experience, I think, this week, where they are difficult. They're just difficult. It makes it challenging to be like, well, they're just like me. We're the same. Even though they're behaving in a way that you wouldn't do. In order to have that kind of like that mental training of being like, no, it's okay. Just let it go. Mm-hmm. Don't get invested. It is what it is. It's just manifesting out whatever situation is going on in their mind. To be able to continue to be in that state of awareness is something that I'm striving for. When I'm confronted with it, I feel like I have been provided so many opportunities to get it. I'm not yet there. So I just get frustrated with myself. It's as though I experience it and I get all mad and irritated and annoyed. And then after the fact, go, oh, okay, I can let it go now. I'm still waiting for that moment where I can do it right then.
Well, you did with your colleague in the meeting with your bubble. Like you were,
yeah.
I call that forgiveness on the fly.
Oh, I love that. Forgiveness on the fly.
And in that moment, being like, whoa, what's happening here?
Let's tweet that.
Not
real. Forgiveness on the fly. I love that.
Turning it back over to HSJ.
Holy Spirit Jesus.
Yep. They're pure and innocent. We're all whole. We're all the one mind.
I think you're the only one that made that hybrid HSJ. I haven't heard that anywhere else. Holy Spirit Jesus.
I like to call on all powers that be.
Right. You could put Buddha in there, but it becomes too long after a while. HSJ is easier.
I didn't watch any TV this week. I was going that much, and I chose to spend time with the Course instead. I mean, that's what's keeping me sane right now.
Me too. But I love the idea of not watching TV, not getting too sucked up in that. In our culture, TV is such an important part of it. And, you know, people spend $200 a month getting cable or satellite or whatever just so they can have, you know, 1,000 options to view when it's not doing anything.
Yeah.
It does nothing for our soul. But I will say, sometimes it's kind of nice to escape.
Definitely. So time, can we go back to time?
Yes.
It's like time isn't real, obviously, but how do we manage our time so that we get everything done without being, I don't know, special? Like, ooh, I have to do all these things for me. Or
this is the dichotomy problem. It's like time doesn't exist, and yet it exists so much that when we wake up, we have to be in the office at a certain time, and we have meetings and we have to attend. Mm-hmm. So time, it's difficult for us kind of in this third dimension experience to say time doesn't matter when it does. So how do we walk that tightrope? Saying, well, it's all happening at once, no big deal. But if you're late for a meeting, you start feeling pain associated with it, mm-hmm. of not respecting time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is weird, this third dimension. I don't like it.
I don't either. It's crazy.
I wish I could talk to Art in person and be like, how did you handle time? How did you handle it?
It goes back to, you know, wanting to move to Oregon and just be living a simple life. It feels like things are speeding up or something, or heightening up.
Do you think it's because of our experience or just the environment around us in this time period in 2015 with technology?
Technology is a bummer, that's for sure. You were saying about on Fridays you want to just turn everything off and not look. I mean, I got two emails this morning from the UK for my work, you know, and I had to respond. I just feel like I'm constantly tuned into my phone and my email.
We are tethered to it. I was saying earlier that as soon as I stopped looking at work email, quitting time on Friday, and I won't look at it until Monday morning, my life has been so much better in terms of stress management. I didn't realize that over the weekend I was looking at these emails and it was just really pinging me emotionally. And I was just so agitated by it and not calm and not peaceful. It's only been a couple months, but man, has that changed my life.
That's wonderful.
Nothing is that important to me mm-hmm. that I can't wait until Monday morning. I'm not a surgeon. Nobody's going to live or die if I'm not responding to an email.
That's a good point. When I think of time, I just think of some line in the course where it was saying that time is provided to us to undo the mind, mm-hmm. to learn this. And so every day is a new lesson, and it's just chipping away a little bit.
And that's why it's so valuable, but it's not valuable in the way that we have been conditioned to believe.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to get to. It's like, it's a different way of looking at time.
The time is, I had said this before, it's a finite and precious commodity in the way we look at it in this third dimension experience, because time doesn't really exist. We're all at one. But if we have been given this gift of finite time, this illusion of finite time, it's best that we use it as optimized as possible and be able to leverage the opportunity that is provided to us with that tool.
I'm starting to think about things I've somehow committed to or signed up for in my life, and what really can I let go of again? Like, I almost feel like I'm in a reboot again. Maybe it's part of spring.
Could be.
Seeing things newly, reinventing myself. Like, you know, my idea of having 20 gardens by 2020 and thinking of some of the enemies that have been trying to get us to cut down the fence in the garden and how maybe I could actually use them on my committee to help me get my goal.
That's brilliant.
And who else do I know that I could do that with? And like that resonates with me to have more spaces for people to garden. The lady last week was on a list for 12 years before she could get her plot. We're living in a city. There's tons of empty lots where we could be helping people grow their own food versus, you know, getting tied up in my friend's mental illness. You know, like I can actually choose where I want to spend my time.
Excellent point. Because we're so easily kind of pulled into stuff that is not for our highest good, we forget that we have control over that. We have ultimate control over what we place our focus on.
Thank goodness.
I know. So why don't we use it more effectively?
I think it's just awakening and being like, okay, I got pulled in by the ego. And I'm going to choose again. I'm going to choose to look through my life through the eyes of HSJ.
On that note, thank you so much, Stephanie. It's been great for this Course of Course Episode 20 podcast. We look forward to coming to you next week. And thanks again to Mike Lemieux and to those who have sent us notes on the Facebook page through our Twitter.
Please look for us, the Course of Course, on Facebook. And the Twitter is at Course of Course. And our blog spot,
www.courseofcourse.com or courseofcourse.blogspot.com.
Perfect. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.